I'm in the communication business, and a little while back, in fact, a couple of years back, I decided that I was failing in a fundamental area of journalism and radio, and that area is one of listening. The problem is in radio, you've got this monkey on your back. It's called the clock. You're always being pushed for time, and every now and then listeners would ring up and say, why did you interrupt that person? And I have to explain, look, at a certain time, you have to squeeze certain things in and you actually lose control of the studio by a computer at a certain time. And you get this creates bad habits. You actually find that you're pushing a conversation along. Now, my next guest, I think, would argue that this prevents what he calls deep listening. And he's worked with some of the biggest companies in the world, Cisco Systems, HSBC, AstraZeneca, yes, that AstraZeneca, News Corp, and a whole lot more. Oscar Trimboli, the host of the podcast Deep Listening. Oscar, thanks for coming on this afternoon.
G'day, Steve, and congratulations, because 81% of us think we're above average IQ, 82% think we're above average drivers, and 83% of us think we're above average listeners. So you know you need some help, mate.
Absolutely. And it's. I want to know, first of all, in my mind, listening implies respect. What does it do for you? How do you see just the process of listening to someone, Oscar Trimboli?
One of the things the ancient Chinese taught the early emperors, so if you were 12, 11, 13, and you were an emperor in training, they taught you this thing called Ting, T-I-N-G, and it's six elements, and only one is to hear and one is to see, and the other four are about focus, respect, and presence. And yet in our local Aboriginal communities as well, they have a beautiful word in language called dadiri, which means listen to yourself, your lands, and your people, and that implies a deep respect for those you're listening to. Here's the problem, Steve. Most of us can't listen to the other person because we've got so many browser tabs opened up in our own brain. We're thinking about what's for dinner. We're thinking about what could we do on the weekend. Should we book a trip to Victoria? Now the borders are open. There's so many other things going through our head while we are trying to listen. So it's very difficult to consider respect. We need to respect ourselves first and know that the biggest barrier to our listening is all the noise in our head. Literally, we've got our own radio station playing, Steve.
What do you mean then by the term deep listening?
Well, we're all taught, you know, listen carefully to what the speaker says. That's a great starting point. The neuroscience tells us really simple bit of maths. I speak at 125 words a minute, yet I think at 900 words. So deep listening is listening to what people aren't saying. So most people can't get the words out to explain what they mean. They will say, you know, Steve, the biggest issue I've got right now is blah, 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 and off they go. Mm-hmm. But if you just take just one moment longer and simply say, maybe when did you first discover this issue? All of a sudden, they'll take a deep breath in, they'll sigh, and they'll go, now that I think about it, this is more important than what I've mentioned already. And that gets to the point of listening deeply is listening to what they have said the second and third time, not what they said the first time. And the reason we have confusion, conflict, and chaos in the workplace, at home, or even in political systems is because people are working with 11% of what the other person's actually thinking. So if you do respect the other person, take a little bit more time at the beginning. It feels like it takes longer, but it actually gets you there quicker because you don't have to redo the work because you didn't listen to what somebody said the first time.
I have a confession to make. My bride, my partner, she once said to me, when you're at home, you're never at home. And I knew exactly what she meant instantly, that I'm constantly distracted basically by work or something I have to do for work or something I'm thinking about for work or something I'm worried about for work or something I forgot to do at work. In other words, there's this monkey on the back or this psychological barrier inside my head to deep listening.
Yeah. So here's a little hack you can do before you get home. You might drive home, you might commute home, it doesn't matter. Just go around the block once with your favourite song in your head that'll create a circuit breaker. For some people that might be Pavarotti, for some people that might be Bon Jovi, but you can rewire your mind really quickly to leave the work behind and come into the home focused on something else. And by the way, if you're working from home because of COVID, just when you leave the room, play that song as well, and that will get your brain reset to start getting you out of work mode and getting you into home mode. But I've got to be honest with you, Steve, our dog saved our marriage. I think his ability to go for walks with me and Jen is a really telling point in me not fixing her, but just listening to what she's got to say. Because men listen to fix and women listen to feel, and sometimes that creates a bit of tension when it comes to the home.
Give me that line again.
Men listen to fix and women listen to feel.
And there's a vast difference between the two. My guest is Oscar Trimboli. He's the host of an award-winning podcast called Deep Listening. How did you get or come up or study or learn the idea of helping people to listen better? Because you've worked with some of the biggest companies in the world and they're pretty successful. So I'm assuming they went to you for a reason.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't claim complete success because they went to me. And I was sitting in a boardroom in a budget setting meeting between Singapore, Seattle and Sydney when I was a marketing director at Microsoft. And at the 20-minute mark of this meeting, my vice president looked across the table and said to me at the 20-minute mark, Oscar, we need to speak at the end of this meeting. And the meeting continued on. The only thing going through my head, Steve, is how many weeks of salary have I got left in the bank account. And by the end of the meeting, Tracy asked me to close the door. And she said to me, you don't even know what you did at the 20-minute mark. And I just thought to myself, Steve, not only am I getting fired, I don't even know why. She says to me, if you could code the way you listen, you could change the world. And the only thing that went through my mind when she said these really profound words were, I'm not getting fired. I can put that money back in the bank account that I'd already spent. And thus, we set on a journey. And it was the chief financial officer, Brian, who asked me next week to audit his listening. I didn't quite get it. I said, Brian, I'm too busy. You gave me this whacking big budget in the budget meeting. I've got to get on and deliver that. He said, no, Oscar, it's not a request. I think it's really important. If you could show me how to listen like you, I think the budgets would go better. And I've been on a quest to create 100 million deep listeners in the world for the last 7 years. And I'm just short of 2 million. I've got a ways to go, but that's the journey that got me there. And what I'm obsessed about is the commercial cost of not listening. That's why those organisations, every Royal Commission you can think of, Steve, whether it was the Banking Royal Commission, whether it was a Royal Commission about bushfires, whether it's a Royal Commission about institutional sexual abuse of children, it's all come about because of a lack of corporate listening. They do the hearing bit well. You know, they hear the complaints, but they don't do the listening bit. The difference between hearing and listening is the action you take. And if they actually acted on those complaints that they were getting through their call centres and through their complaint systems, many of these Royal Commissions wouldn't exist. But a lot of the leaders in organisations, like you say, I'm too busy to listen, and then the consequences are much more significant down the track.
So how do you break that pattern of I'm so busy? You have this psychological sort of Damocles over your head. I mean, everything I do now, I mean, as I'm interviewing you now, I have one, two, three clocks in the studio. And they're all saying the same thing, and they're there to actually help me. I have a limited period of time. I know that certain things are going to happen at certain times. I know my producer's going to call me on the intercom at a certain time and tell me to do something else. And I know at the top of the clock, a computer is going to take control of everything, and it's just going to crash into something else. In other words, the monkey on our back in life is often the clock, this device that measures every 60 seconds what we're doing.
And I always say, for many of us, we should choose to use the technology and not let the technology choose to use us, particularly when it comes to things like mobile phones and laptops. those little red dots and those notifications, those email warnings and all those things that pop up, they were designed by exactly the same people who make you keep pushing a poker machine button. The research that goes into making sure you're addicted to your technology is the same research psychologists have used to make sure you keep pushing the poker machine buttons. So use the technology, don't let the technology use you. Like, you're pretty unique. You've got all those moving parts because you're broadcasting to millions of people and it's got to be right. But I think for most of people in the workplace or at home, that clock isn't as important as we make it out to be. And unfortunately for many of us, we make really rushed, quick decisions that have some consequences that we have to fix up later. And we're trading off short-term gain for long-term costs.
My guest is Oscar Trimboli. He's the host of an award-winning podcast called Deep Listening. The subtitle is Impact Beyond Words. Take me down that path, if you would, Oscar Trimboli. How do I impact someone in a way that's beyond words?
Well, I took a phone call on the Harbour Bridge. It was about 2016 from a client I'd been working with. His name's Mick, and he's probably listening. And he rang me up on a Monday morning. It was 8:16. I still remember the bloody clock emblazoned in my brain because he rang up. He said, "You nearly cost me my marriage last Friday night." And I always say to people, all my research is in the workplace. Please do not try this at home. It will have unintended consequences. After his wife had put the kids to bed at 7:30 on a Friday night, she came down the stairs and looked him straight in the eye and said, "We need to talk." Steve, I don't know if you're like me, but when your wife says you need to talk, it's not going to be good.
It's right? Terrifying. Yes.
So Mick tells me this story while I'm driving over the bridge, and he says, "I'm completely freaking out, and all I said was, tell me more." And she looked at him and said, "I want you to honour our 12-year marriage and just tell me who you're having an affair with, and then we can sort it out." And in his head's exploding. He goes, "I have no idea." Anyway, he just says, "It's not what you think. It's not who you think." And she screamed at him and says, "Just tell me the truth." And then he says, "It's a man, and it's a man who's teaching me how to listen." And she starts crying because she says, "I have never felt sexier in our 12 years of marriage than I have in the last 90 days, all because you've been listening to me." And that's the impact beyond words. Now, I'm not going to promise you better sex if you listen more, Steve. But in Mick's case, he said it was the best night since his honeymoon.
One of the stories that you told or interviews that you did was with the editor of the Huffington Post news website.
Yeah.
And I've sent it to many journalist friends that I had a chance to actually speak about where I think journalism currently is going wrong. Mm. Because it was just after US President Donald Trump was elected, and the editor of the Huffington Post was honest enough to say, "We realised that we'd lost touch with our readership. We were doing stories on this and that, and we realised that given how the election result turned out and how our predictions were entirely different, that we wanted to find out why there was a disconnect." And she told the story of what they did to reconnect with their readership. Can you recall that at all, by any chance?
Oh, yeah. They got on a bus and basically put a group of trainee journalists as well as very experienced journalists on a bus, and they went through 40 different states around the United States. And what they heard, what mattered to people who were voters, was completely different to the kinds of Twitter clickbait that the journalists were being directed by when they were looking at coastal and metropolitan issues. Yes. And I think before we throw any rocks in Australia, I don't think the Australian media does a good job of representing metropolitan outer suburbs as well, or regional areas as well, and they could all do with getting on a bus and getting out there. I think the ABC does it better because they've got feet on the ground, but there's one thing going to Twitter and doing your research there, it's another one listening for what the real local issues were. And as a result, they completely changed their editorial policies, because what was happening is people were literally writing stories with headlines and then just trying to interview one or two people to support the story. But by them going out and listening to what the real hot button issues were out there, all of a sudden what they started to write was different. And as a result, the readership went up as well. But the same is true. Like we didn't listen to Dr. Weiling Li, who was a basketball-loving ophthalmologist who warned the Chinese authorities on December 30 that he discovered COVID-19, and he almost got arrested, except he was asked to recount his story, and then he ended up contracting corona and died while looking after patients. So, you know, the cost of not listening is huge for all of us.
How can I tell, finally, if I'm a good or a bad listener, Oscar Trimboli?
Well, the good news is it doesn't matter what you think. What matters is what the speaker thinks. And the thing that the speakers think drives listening is the following three things. Are you making consistent eye contact? So is your eyes in a laptop or a mobile phone or drifting off somewhere else, or are your eyes engaged there?
Guilty as charged, Your Honour.
The second thing is, are you asking more questions, or are you just trying to solve their issue? Three really powerful questions to practice for everybody is, tell me more, and what else? And then the magic pause. Just use silence. There's no coincidence that the word listen and silent have exactly the same letters. And for you as the listener, I would just say, just take three deep breaths before you go into a conversation, Steve, and that will get those browser tabs shut down in your own mind so you can be focused on them.
Hopefully I'll speak with you again in the near future. Oscar Trimboli, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for listening.
Oscar Trimboli is the host of a podcast called Deep Listening, Impact Beyond Words.